how filthy and dishonest our news media are. You'll be in the shower and you'll think, they're bad, but how bad are they? In fact, this is pretty clearly the beginning of the end for Joe Biden. We can't prove that. The future is unknowable. But holy smokes, it does not look good. The other channels took hundreds of millions of dollars from big pharma companies, and then they shilled for their sketchy products on the air. And as they did that, they maligned anyone who was skeptical of those products. At the very least, this was a moral crime. It was disgusting. But it was universal. It happened across the American news media. They all did it. Either way, if you're an honest person, you understand this is exactly the moment in our history when we need serious adult conversations about the world around us, a world that is changing to our detriment, and how we ought to respond to those changes. Bobby Kennedy would love to have those conversations. He's not running to get rich. He's running to make things better, but he's not allowed to have those conversations. He's been censored. Other media won't even talk to him. He criticized their advertisers. Well, as you've just heard, the Biden administration spends an awful lot of time covering up actual crimes, crimes committed by their political allies and their relatives. But for their critics, there is no such mercy. For the first time in our history, the government has begun to arrest people for saying things the White House doesn't like. That's the end of the First Amendment. Speech that's been protected for centuries in the United States is no longer protected. It's now a criminal act. It would still be constitutionally protected speech. In a free country, which we had until recently, you are allowed by definition to have dumb opinions. Most of us do, but not anymore. So that man you just saw is facing 10 years behind bars for expressing views about Ukraine that the Biden administration doesn't want to hear. That's terrifying. Does no one else think that's terrifying? It is terrifying. Is any news organization you know of so corrupt that it's willing to hurt you on behalf of its biggest advertisers? Anyone who do that is obviously Pablo Escobar level corrupt and should not be trusted. What would that look like? That level of corruption. Imagine the administration declared that if you didn't rush out and buy at least one MyPillow and then at least another booster pillow, you would not be allowed to eat out. You couldn't re-enter your own country. You couldn't have a paying job. MyPillow, they told you with a straight face, was the very linchpin of our country's public health system. Now imagine as they told you that Fox, as a news organization, endorsed it, amplified the government's message. Imagine if Fox News attacked anyone who refused to buy MyPillow as an ally of Russia, as an enemy of science. And then imagine that Fox kept up those libelous attacks even as evidence mounted that MyPillow caused heart attacks, fertility problems, and death. If Fox News did that, what would you think of Fox News? Would you trust us? Of course you wouldn't. You would know that we were liars. The question is, who is telling the truth? There are not many of those. One of them is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Robert Kennedy knew early that the COVID vaccines were both ineffective and potentially dangerous, and he said so in public to the extent he was allowed. Science has since proven Robert F. Kennedy Jr. right, unequivocally right. But Kennedy was not rewarded for this. He was vilified. He was censored. This is one of those moments when it's nice to have a truth teller around. It's helpful because suddenly the stakes are very high. Considering what's happening in Ukraine, topic most of us don't know much about because the details are not reported. It was a year ago that every media outlet in the United States, from USA Today to the New York Times, told you it was a dangerous conspiracy theory to believe the U.S. government had ever funded secret biolabs in Ukraine. The idea was ridiculous. In fact, it was Russian disinformation. And then one day, in sworn testimony, Toria Nuland of the State Department accidentally admitted that it was true. Yes, she said, there are many secret biolabs in Ukraine. And, quote, we are now, in fact, quite concerned that Russian troops, Russian forces, may be seeking to gain control of them. Why does the U.S. government maintain secret biolabs in a primitive country like Ukraine? Why not Austria? Why Ukraine? And why didn't we dismantle and remove these secret biolabs when the war with Russia started? Nobody ever explained that. This show was attacked for asking the question. Now we have learned that actually it is far worse than just biolabs. Not only has the Biden administration been maintaining these labs in Ukraine in the middle of a war, it also has, quote, sensitive nuclear technology in Ukraine as well. And no, we're not making that up. They admitted it today. The latest group of Americans to find their constitutionally protected opinions become felonies are, believe it or not, an organization of black nationalist left-wingers who oppose the war in Ukraine. The DOJ has just charged many in this group with seeking to, quote, sow discord, spread pro-Russia propaganda, and interfere in elections within the United States. Now, there's no evidence they interfered with any election. You're allowed to be pro-Russia. You're allowed to be pro-anything you want in the United States. Saying things the government doesn't like, having unfashionable opinions or opinions that are out of step with Joe Biden's opinions, that is not a crime. You can spread pro-Russia propaganda if you want to. You can spread anti-Russia propaganda if you want to. You can say whatever you want, but not anymore. According to the indictment, the criminals in question, quote, wrote articles that contained Russian propaganda and disinformation. Now, you're very familiar with these points because you have heard them every day since last February. You've heard them repeated by every power center in the United States, the Pentagon, the White House, the leaders of both parties in Congress, CEOs and celebrities. And most insistently of all, you've heard them from virtually every single outlet along the entire spectrum of our national news media. These are the two essential themes of the war in Ukraine, and both of them are lies. We know that they're lies because late last week, leaked intelligence about the war in Ukraine began to appear on social media. Briefing slides prepared by the U.S. government began to show up, among other places, on Twitter. And the slides show that this is, in fact, not Ukraine's war. It's our war. The United States is a direct combatant in a war against Russia. As we speak, American soldiers are fighting Russian soldiers. So this is not a regional conflict in Eastern Europe. This is a hot war between the two primary nuclear superpowers on Earth. And yet, this war has never been formally declared. It has not been authorized by Congress. And for that reason, this war is a violation of American law. It is a crime. Second thing we learn from these slides is that despite direct U.S. involvement, Ukraine is in fact losing the war. Seven Ukrainians are being killed for every Russian. Ukrainian air defenses have been utterly degraded. Ukraine is losing. The Biden administration is perfectly aware of this. They're panicked about it, but they have lied about this fact to the public. Just 2 weeks ago, for example, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin told the U.S. Senate that Russian military power is, quote, waning. In other words, Russia is losing the war. That was a lie. He knew it was when he said it, but he repeated it in congressional testimony. That is a crime. But Lloyd Austin has not been arrested for committing that crime. Instead, the only man who has been taken into custody, or likely ever will be, is a 21-year-old Massachusetts Air National Guardsman who leaked the slides that showed that Lloyd Austin was lying. He revealed the crimes, therefore he's the criminal. What exactly is, quote, sensitive American nuclear technology? Sensitive American nuclear technology? Probably not to produce energy. No one in the media is going to ask that question. But if it's in the middle of Ukraine, in the middle of a war, it stands to reason this sensitive American nuclear technology has military applications. In other words, these are nuclear weapons. What else could they be? We'll stop speculating there. But take three steps back. This is all so crazy and so reckless, it is hard to believe it's happening. Here you have a Democratic president gone completely off the rails, completely, with existentially dangerous consequences, prosecuting a war that can only hurt the United States. A war with no upside. It is awful to watch. But it is not without precedent. Something similar happened 55 years ago in 1968, another remarkably turbulent and ugly year in American history that has many parallels to this. That spring, in March of 1968, Robert F. Kennedy Sr., the former attorney general, the brother to the slain president, announced his candidacy against the incumbent, fellow Democrat Lyndon Johnson. And the overriding issue, then as now, was a pointless war then in progress. To be clear, Robert F. Kennedy was not against all war on principle. He was against that war because he believed, with a lot of evidence, that it was not helping the United States in any way. But you weren't allowed to say that. He did. Party bosses hated him for that, but rank-and-file Democrats loved him. They put pictures of his face in their homes like icons. In the end, they named a football stadium after him in Washington. That was more than half a century ago. But now Kennedy's son is embarking on a similar challenge to his own party and for similar reasons. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced today that he is running for president in the primary against Joe Biden. In fact, this is pretty clearly the beginning of the end for Joe Biden. We can't prove that. The future is unknowable. But holy smokes, it does not look good. And it doesn't look good in a very recognizable way. Somewhere in his basement rec room, drinking a Courvoisier on ice, Andrew Cuomo is chuckling to himself. He's seen this movie before. Joe Biden's own aides keep finding stacks of felonies he's left around the place, in his office, in his car. And instead of throwing this evidence in the fireplace, as under normal circumstances they would, they're sending these documents on to the Justice Department. That's not a good sign. Meanwhile, Biden's attorney general, the most unscrupulous, unethical attorney general this country has ever had, has somehow decided that actually, in order to maintain his unsullied record of nonpartisanship, he's going to have to pass these documents, these stacks of felonies, onto an independent counsel because that always works out well for a sitting president. And by the way, in this case, the independent counsel is a Republican. So the Department of Justice knew on November 4th that Joe Biden had committed crimes. November 4th was 4 days before a pivotal midterm election. So naturally, the DOJ didn't issue a press release about it. They didn't dispatch the FBI to raid Biden's home in Rehoboth and root through Dr. Jill's underwear drawer. No chance of that. Biden may be a terrible president, but he's still a Democrat. It's not like he's orange. So Merrick Garland, who is, and we cannot emphasize this enough, a soulless hack who will do anything the Democratic Party requires of him. Merrick Garland kept the news secret long enough to keep other Democrats out of the blast zone. Why hurt everybody else? They're just trying to hurt one guy. It's Joe Biden. So it wasn't until today that we knew Biden had been stashing state secrets in his Corvette. If you're still wondering where there is an organized effort within the White House to hurt Joe Biden, all you need to know is this. His staff keeps putting him out there in public to talk, which, of course, he can't do. He can barely read a prepared statement. Notice they did not do that during the last presidential campaign in 2020 because they knew it wouldn't help and they wanted the White House. And it helps even less now, but they're doing it. Why are they doing that now? Well, here's a guess. Right after the midterm elections in November, Joe Biden made it clear he had no plans to step aside and make way for Kamala Harris or Gavin Newsom or Michelle Obama. I'm thinking of running again, he said, and he seemed to mean it. Oh, he shouldn't have said that. Next thing you know, he's got a special counsel crawling around his life, armed with subpoena power and a big staff and a big budget. Well, that's how things work in Washington, they'll tell you. Oh, no, it's not. No, it's not. Not unless you have no choice. If you're the president of the United States, a special counsel is the last thing you want. Why? Because you have no idea where that investigation will go. Ask Bill Clinton. He's still mad about it. And that's why there was no special counsel appointed when Hunter Biden's laptop proved that the Biden family was selling influence to the Chinese government. That's why no special counsel ever interviewed Tony Babalinsky. Because that was all before Joe Biden suggested he might run again and thwart the ambitions of the next generation of Democratic candidates. So Joe Biden is in very serious trouble tonight. Classified documents that Joe Biden, quote, stored in his garage and left at the Penn Center have been floating around for a full 6 years since Joe Biden left the vice president's office in January of 2017. So it's fair to assume they've been moved around a lot, but they're suddenly surfacing now, right after the midterm election? Why is that? No one has even attempted a convincing explanation. Instead, the media is pretending to argue that it's not a big deal in the first place that Joe Biden stored classified documents near his Corvette, because he admitted doing it when he got caught. And if you admit you've committed a crime, it's not a crime. Weirdly, we haven't heard a lot about the federal tax investigation into Hunter Biden since. And that is strange if you think about it, since we now have tens of thousands of new IRS agents to enforce tax law. And in fact, it wasn't that long ago that the Biden Justice Department, remember this, indicted Donald Trump's 75-year-old accountant because he failed to declare the full value of his work vehicle. I think he was in handcuffs. But somehow these same enforcers of the law cannot be bothered to bring the Hunter Biden investigation to fruition, not when they have a laptop proving that he took millions from the government of China. How does that work exactly? Did he pay every dollar in federal taxes? Did he fully declare the value of his work vehicle or of his crack? Guns are bad, except in the hands of trans people. In Canada, transgenderism will soon be the justification for suspending all freedom of speech. A new law will ban speech that offends transgenderists near drag performances, so you can't complain. So long ago, it was a feature of high school biology class that biological sex is biologically real. It's detectable at the DNA level. You are born with it. You don't get to choose it. Just as you don't get to choose your height or your eye color, your susceptibility to breast cancer, or a million other things. It's genetic. Genetics are real. Maybe unfortunately, but doesn't change the truth of it. His speech is violence, their violence is speech. See how that works? What's interesting is that the number of people who really care about this issue enough to assault someone over it is tiny. And yet they have disproportionate power. 350 million people in the country, maybe 1,100 feel that way, but they're running everything. Why is that? And by the way, how is sexism even a meaningful category in a world in which sex has no meaning? Well, it's not. Why have Title IX, which bans sex discrimination in schools? If we don't have biological sex, how can we have discrimination on the basis of biological sex? Thinking this through? The Trump administration thought it through. Actually, they saw this coming. We should tell you that. But here's one big difference. Transgenderists do not believe in the God of monotheism. They believe that they themselves are God with the power to control nature. And if you think about it, this should be a concern because it's a recipe for extremism. People who believe that they're God tend to react very badly when told that they're not. One thing your average liberal understands perfectly well is that there's safety in numbers. Don't go out alone, bring 80 million people with you. It's safer that way. There is a reason, a fundamental reason the Democrats are natural joiners and organizers and petition signers, and that their highest virtue is conformity. They know that as long as they're all wearing the same uniform, they'll probably be okay. This is why you'll see one person in Brookline or Bethesda raise a Ukrainian flag in the yard, and the very next day, everybody on the street will have one too. Suddenly, it's an entire neighborhood of foreign policy experts all specializing in Eastern European border disputes. It's amazing. Just last year, these very same people were all eminent virologists, every one of them with passionate views on the details of pandemic management. This is, in other words, not a movement of rugged individuals. This is a party based on the idea of the group, the bureaucracy, the blob. It's the party of weak, fearful people who are huddled together for collective power. When the Democratic Party speaks, it is always with one voice, often in a North Korean accent. One thing the party often speaks about is gun control. No American has the right to own an effective firearm, a firearm that does what firearms are supposed to. They'll tell you this at length. Having a gun like that is just too much autonomy for you. If it continues, you may start to believe that you're a free citizen. And we can't allow that, and we won't. Your anti-trans rhetoric makes the trans community carry guns. Rainbow Reload! They're packing heat. They'll be appendix carrying in more ways than one. Watch out. Wait a second, we thought. This is NPR, National Public Radio, suddenly telling you that actually guns are good. They're valuable tools of self-defense. Really against you. So there are times when guns are good, says NPR. And we thought, well, wait a second, we've been listening to NPR since, well, Click and Clack the Tappet Brothers. And we remember very clearly their position on guns. For example, quote, the U.S. has more guns than any other country in the world. This is the same NPR that, in between updates on the latest trans dinosaur emojis, we've been following those very carefully, routinely run segments calling for more gun control, and not subtle ones, like the segment entitled, Many Gun Owners Support Gun Control, So Why Don't They Speak Out? Oh yeah, a lot of gun owners support gun control. Of course they do. And yet here's that same national public radio, state media, controlled by the Biden administration, encouraging people to go to the gun store immediately. But not all people, just trans people. Guns are bad, except in the hands of trans people. Wow. At this point, it's hard to tell the difference. And the lip-smacking NPR reporters just say it without any sense of self-awareness at all. What is going on here? Well, you know what's going on here. Is that NPR has decided that guns are bad, except when the enforcers of its ideology have guns. You can't have guns, but faithful servants of the Democratic Party can. And that makes sense, because like all totalitarians, they want a monopoly on force, right? So debate ends at that point. When one side has all the firearms, you don't have to argue. You say, well, you can't change your sex. Person who's fallen on hard times, like so many Americans, is getting bounced out of her apartment and herself out of desperation. And anyone hearing or reading that dispatch from NPR reporter Liliana Fowler would feel pretty bad for the person who Kim or herself, politics aside, completely. But it turns out NPR didn't tell the entire story. What NPR left out was that Uzi had a sheriff's deputy prior. In fact, Uzi put that sheriff's deputy in the hospital where he remains tonight after undergoing emergency surgery. That wasn't of any interest whatsoever to NPR's social justice team. They just didn't care. What they wanted you to know was that Uzi was part of the trans community and Uzi died. And so Uzi's life matters much more than anyone's, including the cops, and certainly more than yours. So what underlies all of this? It's not about trans rights, of course. Do you really think Joe Biden and his faithful vice president care about trans rights? Not one bit. About as much as they care about the daily suffering in Selma, Alabama. Not at all. Selma, Alabama is a desperate place. Poverty and violence define it. But they show up once a year to relive the civil rights movement, and then they leave. That's how much they care. And that's precisely how much they care about the trans community. The trans community, of course, is a vehicle for something else. And it's always the same thing, which is political power. And political power made possible by political violence. They want to be able to commit it, and they want you defenseless, so you can't fight back. So Audrey Hale's very existence as a transgender person was so threatening to authorities, just as the Pharisees Jesus. It had nothing to do with the fact she just six people. That was the pastor's sermon at St. Mark's in Fargo. So it's pretty clear that St. Mark's Lutheran Church is no longer a Christian church. So what is it now? Well, it's a transgenderist church, one of many. Transgenderism is this country's priestess growing religion. Like many faiths, its theology features a supernatural transfiguration, the moment a person is transmogrified from one sex to another. Instead, today, Kamala Harris went to Nashville to promote three Democratic Party legislators who led a riot at the State House, a riot designed to promote, yes, the cult of transgenderism. So consider the message here. We're on your side. And not only we're on your side, you, the mentally ill who may be armed, are the victims. And you are being genocided. Your very existence is at stake. In other words, making paranoid people on the edge more paranoid. So fight back. You are fierce. This is not the message to give to religious nuts with weapons, and particularly not this group of religious nuts with weapons. This is a group that has for years been committing acts of violence at rates much higher than you would expect across a cross-section of the population. To give a few examples, last year a trans girl tried Brett Kavanaugh at his home. Then he self-described non-binary, also a member of the cult, five people at a Colorado nightclub. So here's a rule of thumb that is worth tacking on your refrigerator because it explains so much. If the people who claim to be victims are working to oppress you, they're not actually victims. They are oppressors. And once again, with this cult specifically, that is inevitable because at its core is a provable lie, defied and revealed by the unchanging laws of science. We do not have the power to change our sex. It is in our DNA. It is in our bone structure. You dig up a fossilized skeleton thousands of years later, and you can tell it's sex. We can't change that, much as we might want to, much as we might feel deep sympathy for those who want to. We still can't change it. That is true. And so, of course, they have to criminalize your observing that it's true, because that is a challenge to the core of their faith. These are religious extremists on a jihad against the population. And in order to win, they have to force everyone to lie. Period. But there are always a few who refuse, no matter what, to lie. So the people in that frame, and a lot of people, actually, who listen to NPR, care more about pronouns than human life. NPR would rather you didn't know any of this. We only know that this actually happened because reporters like Jason Rantz and Andy Ngo, one like NPR, don't take any money from taxpayers, were paying attention and knew the details. And by the way, Andy Ngo has run the numbers about these claims of violence and genocide against the trans community. And here's what he found, having done actual research into it. Quote, there is no genocide of trans people in the U.S. or anywhere in the West. In fact, there's been an explosion of trans-identifying people, which research suggests is a social contagion spread by social media fads and youth peer pressure. The few dozen trans people tragically killed in America each year are used by black men in the course of prostitution activities. What you're watching here is political hysteria, fear, ginned up on purpose with maximum dishonesty in order to get people in a state of agitation, armed people in a state of agitation. Doesn't matter if they're trans or not, whatever that is. It's the same template always. Scare the crap out of your voters. Tell them that their lives are at risk. Encourage them to get guns. How do you think that ends? But by the way, if we're following the logic here, and why not? That's in short supply in this country. You have to kind of wonder, like, what's the limit to this? So if trans people are in fear for their lives in every region of the country, including New England, which apparently is crawling with now, why wouldn't we be arming them as we are, say, Ukraine's trans army? And there are famously trans people in Ukraine's army. They're very, very proud of that. The Trump White House tried to preserve Title IX by arguing that the concept of sex as defined in that law derives from biology, not from how you're feeling about your personal identity on any particular day. That's the case they made. In response to that, they were denounced as right-wing lunatics. The ACLU declared that, quote, the Trump administration is trying to erase trans people. Really? Maybe it was bigger than that. Now, the Biden administration is in charge of everything, and in less than a year, the worst, most fervid predictions have come entirely true. Female athletes are losing NCAA championships to men dressing up as women in order to cheat their way to victory. Last year, Riley Gaines was a collegiate swimmer at the University of Kentucky. During an NCAA championship, she and her teammates were forced to compete against a man called William Thomas. Now, there's been a lot of news coverage of William Thomas, but here's the truth. Thomas had been a male swimmer at the University of Pennsylvania, and he had a lackluster swimming career, so he came up with a plan. He decided to give himself a female name. And soon, he started winning women's swimming competitions. So what do you call that? Well, you call it cheating. That's cheating. And Thomas's cheating was not a secret. It was obvious to everybody. And the story she told was almost hard to believe in a supposedly rational country. But it was real. And because nobody else had the courage to stop this trend before it accelerated, similar things began to happen all over American sports. And with predictable results. In November, the National Hockey League sponsored an all-trans draft tournament. A male crossdresser was allowed to compete against women. What do you think happened? Well, during the game, the man lightly checked a woman into the boards and gave her a concussion. Yeah, because he's a man, she's a woman. That's simple. A woman is a human being with two X chromosomes. Ask any geneticist. It's detectable in a blood test. But if you're still confused by what a woman is, you can ask a doctor. Women have wider pelvises and different bone structures from men, not to mention very different genitalia. It's usually pretty obvious that women, just by looking at them, women are built differently because their bodies are designed to do different things. Nature is real. Women menstruate. Women give birth and then breastfeed. Men do not do these things because they can't. A man's best instinct is to protect women. That's nothing to be ashamed of. It makes a civilization civilized. That's why we don't send expectant mothers into battle. Got that, you degraded freaks? Pregnant flight suits are an attempt to make us deny our most basic instinct, an instinct that we should not be ashamed of. Joe Biden had this instinct. He noted it. He was absolutely right. Why was he right? Because men and women are not the same. We're not saying one is morally better than the other. They're morally equal, but they're different on the deepest levels, beginning with biology. Every person on Earth knows this is true. We are born knowing it, but now they're commanding you to pretend otherwise, to deny nature and suppress your most basic and valuable instincts. They're telling you you have no right to be more upset when a woman is injured, when a woman gets her ear bitten off in a bar fight, than when a man does. Are you ready to suppress those instincts? Are you ready to live in a society that won't acknowledge them? What happens to our justice system if we pretend men and women are exactly the same or don't exist?
He's different than people want to pretend he is. First of all, the guy was a deadhead.
Whereas Tucker is like, I'm so ashamed that I supported this. I'll never forgive myself for it. And has opposed every subsequent war after that. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I think this guy really believes it. It's really interesting what the public perception of Tucker Carlson is, or particularly how polarizing he is to people, that it's almost like you're there describing a different person than he actually is.
Right.
I think he was the most interesting person in cable news, the most thoughtful, most intelligent. But he was like such a, like the lone voice in like really the corporate press who was completely opposed to the military industrial complex, completely opposed to big pharma and all of the COVID insanity. It was really good on like speaking up about a lot of really important issues that you would think like a good leftist would at least appreciate, that he's good on that issue.
If I was a person in a position of power, and a wild card like Tucker Carlson got released from Fox News, and maybe Rumble makes a deal with him or something like that, do you have any fucking idea how big that would be? How
be big
his show? It could make that app. It could make that platform. I mean, if Tucker Carlson goes over there, it'll be worth it for them to invest a considerable amount of money. But if I was Fox News, that's the last thing I would want. So I would make sure that we have him locked up.
Within hours of January 6th, literally hours, you began to hear that day described as a deadly insurrection, and not described by one news outlet or one politician, but in unison by all of them, almost like it was coordinated. A deadly insurrection. That's how history may record January 6th. But the tape that we reviewed from within the building on that day proves it was neither an insurrection nor deadly.
By the evening of January 6th, the Democratic Party and its publicists in the national news media had settled on a description of what had happened that day. They distilled an enormous number of highly complex events that even now we don't fully understand, into a single emotionally laden political slogan, which they've repeated for years with remarkable discipline. January 6th, they said, was a deadly insurrection. A deadly insurrection. Everything about that phrase is a lie. Very little about January 6th was organized or violent. Surveillance video from inside the Capitol shows mostly peaceful chaos. But the slogan worked. The term deadly carries enormous emotional power, which is why they used it. To prove the insurrection was deadly, propagandists pointed to the death of an officer called Brian Sicknick. The mob killed Officer Brian Sicknick. That's what they said. It was their single most powerful indictment of the January 6th protesters and of Donald Trump and of Republican voters nationally. They repeated that claim for years. They are still repeating it. At first, they told the country that Officer Sicknick was murdered with a fire extinguisher. It was a lie, untrue in any way. But only after that lie had hardened into conventional wisdom did the newspaper bother to retract it. Brian Sicknick should not be reduced to a prop for the political ambitions of the Democratic Party. He was a human being. The facts of his life matter, including how he died. To this day, media accounts describe Sicknick as someone who was, quote, slain on January 6th. The video we reviewed proves that is a lie. Here is surveillance footage of Sicknick walking in the Capitol after he was supposedly murdered by the mob outside. By all appearances, Sicknick is healthy and vigorous. He's wearing a helmet, so it's hard to imagine he was killed by a head injury. Whatever happened to Brian Sicknick was very obviously not the result of violence he suffered at the entrance to the Capitol. This tape overturns the single most powerful and politically useful lie the Democrats have told us about January 6th. And it was indeed a lie. The January 6th committee knew perfectly well that Brian Sicknick was walking normally through the Capitol after he was supposedly murdered by Trump supporters. And they know that because they saw this tape. We can be sure because the footage contains an electronic bookmark that is still archived in the Capitol's computer system. That means that investigators working for the Democratic Party reviewed this tape. They saw it. But they refused to release the tape to the public. Why? Because this tape would shatter the fraud they were perpetrating on the country. Because hiding the truth served their political interest. They lied about the police officer they claimed to revere. If they were willing to do that, then their dishonesty knew no limits. The commercial real estate sector seems to be teetering. The U.S. dollar continues to lose its value. So key economic indicators are, as they say in the market shows, worrisome. But on a more fundamental level, there are also danger signs. When young people are told by their leaders that work is a scam and that stealing things from other people is a human right, how do you think your economy is going to look in 10 years? How about your civilization? The answer depends in part on just how much idleness and theft you put up with. Any society that cannot declare unequivocally and with confidence that stealing is wrong has no future. When you let the mob loot, you are doomed. This is why we used to shoot looters, not because we hated them, it wasn't personal, but in order to defend the foundation of all that we have, which is private property secured by law. Without that, we would be living in savagery and chaos. There's no point to that. Nobody's benefiting. What you're seeing instead is civilization unraveling. Unrestrained violence and destruction, effectively unchallenged by government authorities. The mindless breaking of things, the rage of stupid children. If you let that continue, there will be nothing left standing. Most people don't need to be told that. It's so obvious. It's intuitive. Would you let your kids set fire to the living room? Probably not. But the new mayor of Chicago, who is an ideologue and a racist, understands that these stupid children are his militia. When they destroy what others built, he becomes more powerful. Their destruction has a political use, and so he refuses to criticize them. They're stealing because they're hungry, he told us, like these were the widows of Richmond during the bread riots. The same mob the mayor just defended reportedly tried to break into the Art Institute of Chicago. There was no bread in that museum, only Chagall's and de Kooning's. So these were not people who were trying to feed themselves. These were people who were trying to destroy civilization, destroy a museum, a symbol of our evolution. We shouldn't lie about this. It's very obvious. And if you let it continue, you're done. But Chicago's leaders are lying about it for political reasons. This makes them more powerful. Destroying things that other people built, that previous generations created, makes this new generation of vandals who add nothing more powerful. That's the whole point. A state senator from Illinois called Robert Peters called the riots, quote, a mass protest against poverty and segregation. Right. Chicago's outgoing mayor, the destroyer Lori Lightfoot, agreed. So you can bet that none of these destroyers will be hunted down like animals like the protesters on January 6th have been for over 3 years. Their lives won't be destroyed. Their families won't be hounded. They won't be banned from Airbnb. And yet, of course, what they did is far more destructive to our society than anything you saw in Washington in January of 2021. Their behavior is encouraged. So what happens if you encourage this kind of behavior, if you cheer the mob rather than restraining the mob? Well, ugly and totally inevitable things will happen. Productive people will flee, innocents will die, And ultimately, you will get from this mob racial attacks. All of that is happening in Chicago right now. All of it. You wonder, though, I mean, if you're the opposite, the so-called opposition party, which, of course, most of the time colludes with the Democratic Party. But if you're an ambitious Republican, like running on making the country safe and clean and getting the junkies out of the parks and the marauding teenagers out of 7-Eleven, like that's not hard. Why does nobody do that? Is everybody so intimidated that no one will just say that obvious truth? So this was racist mob violence. And we should not be surprised by that. This is what mobs do. The hive mind takes over, the lowest instincts take over, and people who are different get hurt, often killed. This is widely known and has been for a long time. Just last year, in fact, Joe Biden signed the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act that made what you just saw specifically a felony. And he signed that to much fanfare. And yet, and this is the key, no one at his Department of Justice is investigating that video or anything that happened in Chicago over the weekend because they support it. Democrats approve of racial violence. They are stoking it everywhere. No, it's not your imagination. They want race, hate, and violence. Today, Joe Biden released a statement about a young man called Ralph Jarl, a teenager, a black teenager who was shot after showing up to an elderly man's house in Kansas City. We don't know the details of this. There is much we don't know. And of course, we feel for anyone who was shot, including this teenager. But the White House didn't pause for a moment before drawing conclusions from this sad encounter and using those conclusions to further divide the country on the basis of race. The president said, and we're quoting, "No parent should have to worry that their kid will be shot after ringing the wrong doorbell." Well, that's demonstrably true. But of course, the president is saying this in order to further divide the country along racial lines and to tell a story that is, in fact, not supported by the facts, which is that black teenagers are murdered by elderly white people just for showing up on their doorsteps. Ralph Jarl, thank heaven, did not die from his injuries. He was just released from the hospital. But these kinds of mistakes do happen, and they're always sad, assuming this was a mistake. Again, we don't know all the details. Now, if you think that we're not giving our leaders enough credit, if you're wondering, could they really be that cynical and destructive? Unfortunately, they not only could be, but they are. And the effects, of course, are destructive, always and everywhere. Over the weekend in Compton, California, needless to say, a Democratic Party stronghold, it's not hard to imagine a future in which there are no more gas stations. Because in California, mobs apparently can just walk into a store, including a gas station, and destroy the place, smash the windows, and take what they want. We know that because it happened on Sunday in Compton. Now, this mob was not starving. No, they didn't steal food. They stole beer, condoms, and cigarettes. In Los Angeles, criminals control the stores and the streets because there aren't enough police to respond. And of course, they know that perfectly well. And that's why the people who looted that store then did burnouts in the street while the store was being looted. You can't live in a country like that. No normal person can live in a chaotic, dangerous country like that. And so the normal, productive people will leave. They absolutely will leave. And not just Los Angeles, not just Chicago, all over the country in the cities controlled by the Democratic Party. In New York, a man with 11 prior arrests just bludgeoned a female police officer with a bottle in the middle of the day. You're seeing the attack on your screen right now. And the sad news is, a lot of these attacks, and you see them online if you pay attention, are racial. And that's the last thing you want. You definitely don't want people hurting each other because they're of different races, not in a country like this. Not in any country, but especially not here. This is not what we were promised, and yet it's what we're getting. So what do you do with insurrectionists like that? Insurrectionists who were also white supremacists, as they always are, but not, and here's the tricky part, in some cases even white. So you have non-white white supremacists who insurrect. That's very tough. How do you handle them? Simple force doesn't always work. These are hard cases. You need to re-educate people like that, possibly in camps, re-education camps, if you will. You must deprogram them for the safety of the rest of us. We told you that no matter what they're claiming on television or how loudly they are claiming it, their main goal is power.
It always is. In order to seize that power, they will do literally anything, whatever it takes. They'll silence you, they'll hurt you, they'll burn your country down, and they're doing all of that now. You're watching it. So the question is, how should you respond to this? And the answer is, with courage. You're an American. You live in a free country. You have nothing to be ashamed of. You don't have to apologize for crimes you did not commit. You have the absolute right to say exactly what you believe is true. That is your birthright. Now is the time to affirm that right out loud. When enough decent people rise from their knees and stand down the mob evaporates. These people are not warriors, they are vampires. They melt in the light. When we show them we are not afraid, they go away. That's what we told you last night. Minutes after we said that, the mob came for us. Irony of ironies. They spent the last 24 hours trying to force this show off the air for good. They won't succeed in that, thankfully. We work for one of the last brave companies in America, and they're not intimidated. We're grateful for that. But the whole thing did get us thinking that we should be more specific about who this mob is and what they're doing. Who are the people trying to take over your country, cancel your rights, eliminate our centuries-long tradition of tolerance, yes, tolerance, and of free expression? And the truth is, we often don't know their names. They're mostly faceless political agitators who exist primarily online. They're trolls who thrive on cruelty. And yet suddenly they have immense power over all of us. Weak leaders now reflexively bow to their demands, no matter what those demands are. Why is that? What's changed?